Hi, everyone. So welcome to this week's W3C CCG meeting. So today we're just going to have a Q4 2024 review and work item updates and also just an open agenda. So if you have any questions or agendas or things that you want to bring up, feel free because today is the open floor. Before we start, I just want to quickly go through some of the administrative stuff. First of all, just a quick reminder on code of ethics and professional conduct. Just want to make sure that we hold constructive and great discussions here. Now, a quick note on the intellectual property. Anyone can participate in these calls. However, all substantive contributions to any CCG core items must be member of the CCG with full IPR agreements signed. So if you have any questions in regards to getting a W3C account or the community contributor license agreement, feel free to just let any of the co-chairs know. Please note that all the conversations are public, so that if there's any private things that you don't want to share with the public, that's something to be aware of. Now, a quick note, these meetings are automatically being recorded and also transcribed, as you can see it live. So we will try to publish the meeting notes as well as the audio and video recording in the next 1 or 2 days. We use GC chat to queue the speakers during the call, as well as to take the minutes. So you can type in Q+ to add yourself to the queue, or Q- to remove. And let me just remind myself and put a topic for today's agenda actually in the chat. Give me a second. So if I do this, then in the recordings, then we will have it in the transcriptions. All right, so let's take a quick moment for the introductions and reintroductions. So if you're new to the community or you haven't been active and want to re-engage, feel free to just unmute. And since today is we have a smaller audience. If you don't unmute, I might call some people. I will, since you're one of the cultures, you want to say a thing or two? Start with you.
Sure, I'd say hello. Hi, everyone. Yeah, I'm Will. I'm the co-chair of this group, also the co-chair of the DID working group, and I work for Legendary Requirements, interested in generally DID and VC stuff and core cryptography as well. Yeah, so that's great. Me. If you have any questions about this group or, want to reach out to me, that's fine. Feel free. You can find me at will@ledrec.com.
So. Great. Yeah. Will has been a great partner of mine. So thank you. Very fortunate to have you here. Anyone else want to introduce yourself? All right. Please, Nivas.
Thanks, Harrison. It's not really an intro. I think this is my third call here. I just had a question to the community. I'm very interested in the whole self-sovereign identity and its concepts. It's so vast, so many organizations and many things are going around. So as a non-coding person who doesn't know to code, how can I contribute in any way? Just wanted to get some advice on that. That's it. Thanks.
Yeah, definitely. So as well know, and some of you guys know, I actually don't code as well. So you can definitely contribute. I mean, I have the GitHub account, but I was just telling Will, sometimes I'm afraid to mess things up and mess up the directories and things like that. So you can definitely contribute. I think there's a lot of community reports that's not super technical, so you can definitely contribute. But I'll probably start with going through the repositories and then maybe correct some mistakes or add comments and things like that. I think that would be a good start.
Thank you.
Great question. Anyone else? All right, I saw that Dimitri here. Dimitri, I'm calling out a couple of people, and I'm starting with the old timers, so that they, because you guys are probably less afraid to speak up. So Dimitri, do you mind like kind of introduce yourself a little bit?
Hi everyone, I'm Dimitri Zagadoulin. I'm a software engineer in the decentralized identity and credential space. So I do a little bit of everything. So I work on specifications. I do hands-on coding on some of the libraries that create credentials, that do signatures. I work on wallets. And I help manage dev teams and so on. So I'm personally super interested in bringing some of this tech that we're working on in the CCG, such as credentials, wallets, DIDs, access control. I'm interested in bringing that stuff to other areas like decentralized social web. So I don't know if any of you have come across things like Mastodon and Blue Sky and some of the Twitter and Facebook alternatives. There's a lot of interesting activity happening in that space right now, using some of the tech that we've incubated here in this group. So I do some work in verifiable credentials in education. Again, just another vertical that finds stuff incubated here really useful. So big fan of the group. I'll stop there.
Thank you. And Dimitri also chairs the social web working groups. Oh, sorry, community group. So if you're interested, join their conversations there. All right, I just saw Manu jumping on. Manu, we're doing a quick intros. I'm calling out of people. You're one of the former co-chairs, so do you mind speak a few words?
Sure, happy to. Hi, my name's Manu Sporny. I was one of the people that got together with some of the rest of you and created this group way back in 2014, almost a decade ago. I largely focus on kind of the specs and editing the specs. So verifiable credentials, decentralized identifiers, along with the data integrity stuff and render methods and things of that nature. I also, am the CEO of a company called Digital Bazaar. We then take those kind of, standards, create products around them and, deploy them into the market through organizations like U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services in the United States and the state of California DMV, in the retail sector, through, National Association of Convenience Stores and other retailers. So it's been wonderful to see the community grow over the years and, tackle new verticals like Dimitri was talking about, around, social web and that sort of thing. Wonderful to be here and spend the time with the rest of you building something that I think is pretty important for global society. That's it.
Thank you, Manu. And by the way, Manu is still helping out with the CCG stuff. Like, when I have a problem, I just always go to him. So thank you. Thanks, Manu. All right. Any other introductions or reintroductions before we move on to the next item? Don't be shy. All right. I'm feeling lucky, so I'm going to call on Ted. Ted, do you mind one more call on? Do you mind introduce yourself a little bit?
Sure. I'm Ted Thibodeau. I've been working with OpenLink Software since late 2000. Involved in oogobs of W3 groups involving RDF and linked data and identity and privacy and too many to actually bring to mind. I'm also one of those people who does not so much code. Well, my primary coding language is English. And so that means that I do a lot of poking at grammar and punctuation to try and make specifications actually say what they're meant to say. And don't feel bad if I don't poke at yours, because that means your English is good. And don't feel bad if I do poke at yours, because it just means that something needed a little clarification.
Thanks, Dad. All right. Next, just want to go to the announcements or reminders. Any announcements or reminders?
Yes, I've got one. There is a, sorry, I totally did not raise my hand. There is a current thing happening at the Internet Engineering Task Force, Crypto Forum Research Group, to adopt, some of the work that this group has been doing. I'm going to put a link in to the chat channel. This is around a BBS pseudonym. So, you know, privacy is really important to this group, and we're trying to create these global standards that enable someone to prove some aspect of themselves without oversharing data, like prove that you live in a particular country but not share your home address, or prove that you're employed by a particular organization but not express your name or your employee badge number or something like that. So there's a BBS that allows us to do that, and there are pseudonyms and blind BBS that are up for. We're trying to get the ITF to adopt it, the CFRG, the Crypto Forum Research Group, to adopt it. And it's really important that people come forward and say, hey, these features are important to me. This is why, please, you know, adopt this work. So there's we're trying to get a call for adoption to happen at CFRG. We need the community's support in doing that. If you go to that link and you have to sign up for the mailing list, and then if you like respond and say, hey, I support the adoption of this, that would really help us get some of these more privacy preserving technologies adopted. That's it.
Thank you, Manu. Any other announcements or reminders? Manu, please.
Sorry, I forgot. The other thing that's happening right now that folks might not be aware of is there's a group of us between the CCG and Decentralized Identity Foundation, Trust Over IP Foundation, IOTA Foundation. There's a fairly large group of us getting together that are trying to standardize a few DID methods. We had our first meeting, I think last week. I think the next meeting is, we'll try to send that out to the mailing list. But there was really good turnout the last time. There were 35 people there, all interested in standardizing DIDs. If you're interested in being a part of that process, it's free to join. You know, you just show up, share your opinion and thoughts. We'll get the next meeting announcement out to the CCG, but just wanted to make sure that people were aware that that was happening, because it's probably going to move pretty quickly to select, you know, the features that we want in these DIDs that we intend to go and standardize at the World Wide Web Consortium as one of the target standards bodies. That's it.
Cool. Any other announcements or reminders? So a quick preview of what's coming. So next Tuesday, we'll have Heather to talk about the latest developments on Federated Identity Working Group. And then the week following, we'll have Simona, Dimitri, and Idiko to talk about the VCEDU. And I'll send out those agendas a week in advance. All right, last calls for announcements and reminders. All right, so let's get to the work item updates. Let me bring this up. Everyone should be able to see my screen. So first of all, I just want to give a quick shout out to everyone who have updated these slides. Quick shout out to Manu, Benjamin, and Isaac to actually help update these things. So quickly go, walk through it. VC API. Someone wants to give a quick update? Or I can read the slides. Please.
Yeah, I can do a quick update. We've been meeting we meet every Tuesday at 3 p.m. Eastern. We send the meeting agenda usually out to the mailing list. We continue to kind of discuss VC API and how it's being used and whatever from week to week. The work there, of course, has been delayed pretty greatly because of all of the work in the VC 2.0 working group. We're trying to get those specs through the standardization process before we turn our efforts to finishing up VC API. However, the number of implementations for VC API have climbed dramatically over the last quarter, right? I mean, we just talked about this 3 months ago. In 3 months, we have 5 new implementations that use VC API, bringing the number of implementations up to 16, which is like, that's great. And it's like way more than we need to standardize at least the base form of VC API. Just as a reminder on what VC API is, it does kind of credential lifecycle management, including issuance, verification, presentation, modifying the status of the credential, like revoked or needs a refresh. That's a new thing we're going to be talking about, or suspended. You can run OID4 VCI and OID4 VP over the VC API. So one thing that people don't quite understand is like VC API kind of sits above, in a layer above, OID4. There are also VC workflows and exchanges. That is being used, much more heavily in the retail space, for like retail based, use cases. It is also used extensively in the canivc.com website and the VC working group test suite. So everyone that is conformant to the VC test suites are also to some degree conformant to the VC API, especially like the issuance and verification part of that API. It is in production with California DMV and OpenCred, which is being used by a number of California agencies to read the California Digital Driver's License. That's in a verifiable credential format. It's in production for TrueAge with, 152,000 stores across the U.S. Building towards integrating, with TrueAge. That's been in production for about 2.5 years at this point. Most of the issues have resolutions. We just need PRs to be written. It's just slow going on those PRs. We do have a proposal for a next iteration of the VC working group that includes things that are being incubated in this group, like render method and a confidence method and verifiable credential barcodes and verifiable credential wireless and VC API as well. So we think that proposal is going to go out Q2 of 2025. We're waiting on finishing up the VC 2.0 work before we go on to kind of the next, things. That's it for, VC API.
Thank you. Any questions or comments on the VC API? All right, next, VC test suite. I'll see Benjamin on.
Yeah, I can probably take this one. I don't see Benjamin either. The test suites are, what they say they are. They're the test suites that we're building for the verifiable credential, work. There is a test suite for verifiable credential 2.0. ECDSA, ECDSA SD, which stands for selective disclosure. So that's like a selective disclosure mechanism that uses government supplied, government proved cryptography. There's BBS, which lets you do unlinkable disclosure. There's EDDSA that just uses the Edwards curve, And then kind of a more legacy one, ED25519 Signature 2020, which is the one that's deployed for the True Age program across the US. We also have test suites for Bitstring Status List, VC Hosey Cozy, and VC JSON Schema. These test suites help people understand whether or not they're conformant to the specification. So to write something to the test suite, there's a API that you follow. You implement the API, which is the VC API right now. And then the test suite will make a bunch of calls to your implementation and tell you whether or not you passed, the statements in the specification. Could we jump to the next slide? Yeah, that has implementation. So since the last time we talked, all the green that you see there, the pluses, are the new implementations that we've gotten in the last 3 months. So we have four new implementations for the verifiable credential data model, 2.0. We've got two new implementations for ECDSA. We've got two new implementations for BBS, four new implementations for EDDSA. Two more for the, kind of legacy Edwards 25519 signature 2020. And we lost an implementation. I think, someone just kind of like dropped out of the test suite. For Bitstring status list, we've got two new implementations as well. VC Cozy Hosey does not have any implementations that we know of right now. And VC JSON Schema only had block as the implementation. And, you know, the future of that implementation is unknown because that business unit, unfortunately, at block was doesn't exist anymore. But overall, we again have like way more implementations that we need to go to a final standard at W3C. The main thing we're waiting on right now is a security review. And that security group was just formed, this week. And so we expect that to happen over the next, month or two. That's it for test suite.
Thank you. Any questions on the test suite? All right. Next, quantum safe data integrity signature suite. Anyone have any updates? I don't think Andrea is on. Okay, I think we can skip. We talked about this a couple months back, and then afterwards we also had a presentation on the benchmarks, the quantum post-quantum cryptography is a benchmark, right? So we'll skip this one. VC, do you? So we'll have the VC EDU folks to kind of provide an update in 2 weeks. So I think we can skip this one as well. VC traceability. Oh, by the way, right now there's two final community reports that Will and I are trying to see how to publish it as a community reports on CCG. But just wanted to do a last call on if people have any objections. So I think we did it a month ago or more than 2 months ago, more than a month ago, and there's no comments or objections. So I think we will proceed to publish it. Yeah. Any questions?
Yeah, I mean, I can talk briefly to this. I don't know, maybe this is a new process at WCC or maybe we're just not familiar with it, but I don't know if anybody knows how to publish a report as a working group, but it feels like from my brief research at the start of this call, people, you know, when there's a report that's ready to be final, maybe Manny, you can speak to this, we should be opening a pull request to this repository, and then I think anybody can do this. And then once that's accepted and merged, then it's up to the chairs to add it as a final report through some online interface that we have access to. So, Manu, is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. And the online interface it used to be on the community group page. So you go to the community group.
Yeah, I found it. I know where it is. Yeah.
Okay. So that's all that you need. The reason that you publish in the CG reports place is so that there's a stable identifier that's created for it, and then you use the stable identifier when you publish through the CCG.
And does the CG reports page also create, like, it hosts them, right?
Yeah. If you look at let's see, yeah, it hosts them at some URL. Let me try and see if I can, yeah. So if you look at, like, the, you know, JSON-LD final URL, it's on a, you know, GitHub IO mm-hmm. page. And so whatever directory and subdirectory you create, that's the subdirectory that you put on that URL, w3c.github.io/cgreports/, in whatever directory you create, that's the permanent URL hosted at W3C.
So Will, can we do it? Because like you said, we cannot change the W3C credentials, the main page, right? So
no, we can do that. We've got access to that interface. I think I'll just ask NIST to submit that PR, unless he wants me to do it. Like, I think they can submit the PR and then we can add it to the community report.
Okay. Got it. Yeah, I thought it's one of the WordPress sites, and then I don't think we have permissions to change that WordPress site. So yeah. Okay.
They provide a tool that lets you change the WordPress site.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Oh. Yeah, it's like one of the chair tools. Yeah, it's kind of buried and hidden, but yeah, the chairs have the capability to update the WordPress site.
Oh, got it. I might want to ping you and then see where the link is, because I don't know how. Yeah, I need to figure out how. I haven't figured out how I can change that WordPress site.
So Harrison, I think we should keep going through this, and then maybe we can talk a bit more about these reports and, like, because I found a list of, like, our current available, like, final specifications that it might be nice just to review, and then it would be very interesting to me, at least, to hear what other reports do we have that people think are currently going through draft that might become final, and then also, you know, looking into the next year, like, are there any reports that we might want to be starting? Well, let's finish working through this CCG.
Yep. We'll do. Okay. All right, next, VC render method. Bonnie, do you mind
Happy. I can do the next couple, I think. So the VC render method is a way for issuers to express how they want their credential to be rendered on a web page, in a digital wallet, on a piece of paper. There's even we demoed a wireless render method, so you can say how you want your credential to be rendered in the electromagnetic spectrum, like NFC, Bluetooth, that kind of thing. So there's this spec that we're working on. Singapore government is also helping, as is Dimitri and Patrick St. Louis from the community there. Canada is doing some work in this space as well. There are multiple implementations. We're still trying to figure out the best way to do this, but fundamentally, I think we're kind of converging towards having a document that you can provide a content identifier for, so like a hash. So you've got a document that's on the web. You also include the content hash of that document so it can't be changed. And then in that document, you use a certain syntax to inject parts of the credential into the display. So if you look at, like, the driver's license on the left, the driver's license number, the expiration date, the motor vehicle class, the address, That's all coming straight from the verifiable credential, the digitally signed verifiable credential. And all the imagery there, the photo, is also digitally signed over, the watermark image of the photo is digitally signed over and that sort of thing. If you look on the right, we've got an emergency medical technician, EMT credential, the IDs pulled from the verifiable credential, the names pulled from the verifiable credential, that kind of stuff. So, we believe, this is out there. The BC Playground supports it. It'll issue credentials that use it. We already know that there are a number of wallets that are starting to use this to render the credential, in kind of a higher, in a way that the issuer wants. There's not too much to this, extension. Like, it's pretty straightforward. We think it's probably going to be ready for standards track Q2 2025. So we need to make one more pass on the specification. We need to figure out how to, work with Singapore, on this stuff. But it's going fairly well, so far. That's it for, render method.
Got it. And you might also talk about the barcode.
Yes. So the barcodes work is stuff that we are working on with Credence ID. So for those of you that don't know who Credence ID is, they're the ones that do the mobile driver's license TSA scanner. So when you go to board an airplane with your using your mobile driver's license ISO format, in the future, hopefully verifiable credential format. They're the ones that do the readers, to ensure that the digital version is valid. They're also working on an upgrade, to those systems that will read a verifiable credential off a physical license. So we're upgrading, driver's licenses, permanent resident cards, employment authorization documents, things like that to include a verifiable credential, digitally signed barcode information that lets you know whether or not the physical ID has information on it that has been issued by a known, like, federal or state government. To be clear, it doesn't mean that you're not dealing with a copy, meaning, like, you can still copy the barcode, and it's a totally legit barcode. But you know at least that the individual isn't, like, entirely made up, like the biographic information isn't made up. In the past 3 months, we've added 3 implementations that support verifiable credential barcodes. The plan is to try and take them standards track Q2 2025. The specification's pretty stable. Like, we've got multiple implementations. People seem to be okay with the state it's currently in. And their plans on taking this production, at some point, next year. That's it for VC barcodes. I think I saw Dimitri jump on the queue.
Yeah, I was wondering, if you could say a few words about what's the character limit or the byte limit on, the cool, barcode that takes up like half the card.
Yeah,
it's
incredibly limited. 200 bytes tops, and that includes the digital signature base encoded. So you can do about like 125 bytes if you're lucky. So what we had to do is we have to CBORLD encode the payload so we get the maximum binary compression. And really what it does is it signs the information on the card, either the PDF 417 data, which is like, first name, last name, address, all the data in the barcode, it'll sign. So you'll have a hash of the data. For like employment authorization document, that front barcode is just the digital signature itself, and it signs the information on the back of the card. One of the biggest fraud vectors is people putting different barcodes on the back of the card or the front of the card, and it doesn't match the information on the other side of the card. So, it's super, super, super limited. There's another one that I think Dimitri called verifiable credential QR codes that we're able to put more, verifiable credential information in. But yeah, I mean, you've got 200 bytes. realistically to work with, and 64 bytes of that is signature, and 64 or 32 bytes of it, you know, tends to be hash. And then the rest of it are things like status list. So you can actually include a status list suspension revocation into these things as well. Did that answer your question, Mitri?
Yeah, thank you so much.
By the way, Monia, can you state again, like, what's the difference between the front and the back? The back is the sign, the signature with the content. Like, what's the front?
Yeah, so if we look at that top card, the signature and the data, live together. So the driver's license on the back, that huge, you know, PDF 417 barcode, both the driver's license information is expressed in PDF 417 and the signature all in one barcode. The one on the bottom is for more legacy documents. And by legacy, I mean like MRZ data. That MRZ is machine readable zone. It's the thing on the bottom right, that iAuto blah, blah, blah stuff, Smith-John and all the little left characters, left angle brackets. That data format comes from like the 50s to 60s. Like, it's a really, really super old data format. And so we needed to get, you know, we needed to get a digital signature on the card somewhere. Most of the people that do these types of cards have like a fingerprint, on the card, which we were really trying to get rid of, like the whole biometric fingerprint stuff. We were trying to get it off of the card. And so we replaced that fingerprint, with a QR code, and that QR code is a digital signature over the data on the back of the card. So the data and the digital signature are separate. They don't live together, if that makes sense. So that's the only difference between the top and the bottom.
Oh, so you won't have two barcodes in the same card. This is showing like two kinds of implementations, basically.
Exactly right. Yeah, sorry. That was totally not apparent, was it? Yeah, that's right. These two totally different ways of using the same technology on different kind of card form factor.
Got it. Thank you.
Let me give you an idea. The card on the top is typically used like passports or passport cards.
Ah, got it. Thank you. Thanks for the clarification.
Yep.
Any other questions? All right, verifiable issuers and verifiers, I think.
Yeah, thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. Yeah, so I'll just give a short update, actually. So I think David also is on the call. We are from Verifiable Issuers and Verifiers group. So we meet twice a month, so bi-weekly. And currently we are working on a data model on creating verifiable issuer and verifier list. And one of the use case which we addressed is the education use case, how education credentials are, you know, can be created or can be verified globally, and also the data model we just attached in this link, actually. And this data model is built based on etsy EIDAS version 1, but currently we are updating into a JSON model. Previously that it was an XML format, and this is an update we are just want to give now, actually. And we are already implemented this in two pilot projects, but with different adoptions according to the use cases in Gaia X Federation's use case, and also the RegiTrust as part of a UNDP project. So both are open source projects. And we are trying to address, we will be publishing the first draft, because we are also defining some criteria, which attributes are mandatory and which attributes are optional. And also we need to do some analysis. And once this is done, we will be publishing the version in the GitHub repository. So that's a short update, and I'm open for questions. And David, if you want to add something, please feel free to do so.
Thank you, Isaac. Any questions or comments? All right, lastly, DID link resources. I don't think there's updates here, at least not yet. Anyone can speak to this? right. Any comments or questions on the work items? Bonnie, please.
Yeah, I think there are potentially two categories that we might be missing. I went back and forth on trying to figure out if we should add these slides, but one of them is around like the DID method standardization work. Like that's a pretty big, you know, kind of work topic that's going to be happening. That, you know, this community is also involved in. And then the other one has to do around, and this might be a more kind of open question about how we structure this work. The other one has to do with vocabularies. So like, you know, the citizenship vocabulary, the driver's license vocabulary, that we're working on, in this group. There are at least 30 other vocabularies that I think are going to probably appear at some point next year. And it feels like the way that we currently structure the work in the group might lead to the group being overwhelmed by that many parallel work items when they're really kind of under the guise of like vocabulary development. And so this is kind of an open question to the group. How do we structure vocabulary development? Like if 30 vocabularies appear next year, how does the group kind of absorb all of that work? To be clear, like vocabulary development, tends to not be the same as like specification development. It's usually you like create a first version of the vocabulary. It only takes like, you know, maybe a day or two or maybe at most a week of thinking to put the vocabulary together. And then you can kind of build it out and experiment with it, and iterate on it. But to get a V1 out, it's a pretty short process. If it's a fairly focused vocabulary. So anyway, just wondering what folks think about, you know, how we tackle vocabulary development in this group. The other point to make about vocabulary development is because we as a community have invested in decentralized ways of producing these vocabularies, they don't have to go standards track to be useful. Some of them, it's, you know, can be useful to take them standards track, but many of them, like marking up a movie ticket, it's not a very complex data model. You know, it doesn't really need to go through a global standardization process. So the question is like, how do we do that kind of development?
By the way, just to quickly clarify, by vocabularies, you mean schemas, right?
Yes, some people call them schemas. We try to, there are different names for these things, right? So schemas, sometimes people mean JSON schema. Other times they mean like, how do I describe, a driver's license? Right. Mm-hmm. And you can use vocabularies and schemas for both. Vocabularies are like, what are the properties that go into a driver's license? What would you find on a driver's license? Whereas schemas are what syntactically exactly, you know, is a, what's the format of the date and, you know, is it a string or is it a number or, you know, things like that. So they're related, but not always the same.
Basically, like field names. You're talking about standardizing like the field names and the structuring.
Yeah. Okay. That's right. Yeah, that's what the vocabulary works about. And sometimes you also do schema development, meaning like the structure and the range. Is this field a string or a number, or is it a specially formatted string? You know, things like that.
But you know, like various groups has developed. Like for example, DIF also have a schema development, like. Initiative, right? So how do we kind of work together to make sure that people don't do double work? Yeah. I guess that's the question to figure out. Right. Yeah.
Right. So I've been here too long, which means that I have a number of zombie work items that have repeating events in my calendar, which are subscription items from external calendars. These were all created when work items were started up or moved around a bit. And sometimes there are two or three or four separate calendar subscriptions for what is the same work item. And these may have events happening at the same time or may have multiple events in the weekend. Two or three of them are zombies and one of them is the real one. Fixing this is going to require some re-enlistment of people who have moved on to other tasks, like Mike Krorock or Ori Steele, and there are others, I'm sure, who were chairs of work items when they were more active, but now that they're less active, and, or even if they're just different people who are sort of leading that work, the tools didn't necessarily get passed on. This probably needs all the current and former chairs to get together somehow and figure out who has access. Like at least one of these, there is a Google account that was set up for the traceability work items. And that lingers on, but nobody seems to know how to log into it. And so they can't fix the calendars that are associated. I don't want to just drop them from my calendar subscriptions because sometimes there are things in there that are actually still important. Even though there are zombies going on that just fill up my day with alerts that I can ignore, but remembering which one is the one I should ignore and not ignoring the ones that I shouldn't is challenging. I think that's clear enough.
Yeah, I totally get it. Unfortunately, like, I don't have access to all these accounts, like, especially the Google ones. This is why I started just sending emails, right? Because I have control and access to my own email, right? So I send out those things, and the calendar system, we move to W3C calendaring system because that's what they recommend us to do. So, unfortunately, right. I'm not sure how we can remove those Google calendar events because, I still couldn't figure out who has access to them.
I think in a lot of cases.
Sorry, Ted?
Together in a Zoom session or whatever, and trying to visit the page, the relevant page, and trying to log in with the relevant ID, and if all is good in the world, somebody has used their password manager to save the password for the account and can actually log in now.
Yeah.
And hopefully somebody who's doing that also still has the same phone number so they can get the two-factor authentication to work. I mean, I know this is non-trivial, but it's completely out of my range of being able to do it because I was never one of those people. And I know it's not in the range of people who are current chairs, because they were never one of those people when those things were the way it was done. But even the current W3 calendar instance of the traceability events does not have correct information in it. It still points to Ori and Mike.
Yep, I get it. You know, this is kind of called a calendar tech debt. Happens, right, in all organizations. So I think immediately, for lack of a better term, the source of truth is just the email agenda that I send out every week. And then I'll try to figure out how we can resolve this, calendar/tech debt. It is going to be a little bit tough. It's not just with CCG, even at Spokio. I mean, we do a lot of, we actually spend about 10% of our resources resolving these kind of tech debt. But even then, you know, it's always a challenge, right? In all organizations. But we'll try to corral people. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think I'll add, like, we definitely can do what Ted suggests and try and reach out to other chairs on an email at least and see who might have access, maybe organize a call. Like, yeah, I also just don't have visibility of, I mean, I'm not even subscribed to these events, so like, I don't have visibility of where all the events are. So.
Yeah, so Ted, if you could actually send us a list of these, I guess, Google Calendar events, we can help you chase them. I know the traceability one, but I don't know the other ones that you're referring to. So, yeah.
I'll see what I can track down. I know I've sent similar emails before and gotten nowhere. There have been, you know, a reply or two saying, I don't have access to that, or I never had access to that. And then it just dies. And that's.
Yep. I'll be very frank. It is a low priority, but I will continue to try to chase these issues. Yeah.
I think it's important to get it right because, well, speaking for myself, that email that you send out, I don't get to unless I remember. I get an alert about the meeting, and then I can go search my email for it. Because those emails don't result in alerts. And I have, you know, 4 million messages a day. So.
So you gotta do all caps. Does that help or not?
No.
Yeah, that probably goes to spam filters, right? All right. Your feedback is well taken. Yeah, send us those things. I'll try to see if I could ping those guys. But, you know, sometimes people don't respond, then it's a little bit tough. Yeah. Got it. All right, we'll have 7 minutes. Will, do you mind quickly go through that committee reports that you want to? Yeah.
Sure, yeah. I mean, we don't have lots of time, but this is kind of new to me today. This link here is one of our places that is, face to the world, if you like, for this group. And if you scroll down a bit, you can see there's two headers, final reports and drafts. And so these are the things that we're saying to the world. This community group has published, right, as following its processes. I have a couple of questions. One is this up to date and accurate? Are there other things that we have published that we haven't gone through the correct processes to make it a final report following the W3C's process? And two, are there things that are currently in draft status? I think there are, right? Like at least the linked resources that maybe should be in here. I know it's complicated because seems to be lots of places where we have to manage and update, but certainly this is one of the places that the W3C, I think, would like us to maintain. So I guess any comments or questions around that, like, I think it's something that I will try and be more aware of in the future because I didn't really know this place existed. So can anyone see any glaring mistakes? I mean, I can see one, like the descent size identified did syntax is still a draft. Maybe that should be finalized. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, where does it say draft? Yeah, I don't know how to get rid of that. Like we published it and then I think we did a final report. I think we just stopped publishing drafts because it wasn't super useful, right? And I don't know if there's a way for you to kind
I
of
can delete it.
That. Yeah, I that's what I do. I mean, I don't think it. I don't think it has a lot of, we've got the GitHub history and everything that goes back even further than that. The only thing that really matters are the final reports, the licensing commitments, to show that like we handed the document off from this group to another group.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I guess that is a question to us, but is this a use? I mean, it seems like the draft maybe isn't useful, but when they come final, we should be making sure we go down this route. So maybe a question to you, Manu, are there reports that we think are final that haven't been added on here yet that are missing from this list? Because it seems to be, I mean, like the last one we published was 2022.
Yeah, we're missing Bitstring status list. We're missing BBS, Crypto Suite. It's a bit late to kind of publish those, meaning like they were, you know, adopted. They've already been adopted. If we wanted to, you know, have that record, I think it would be good for us to go back and fix that. We can always.
It's a nice point we can point to for, like, you know, people like, what do you do as a community? Like, this is the place, like, yeah. Here's all of the work we've done.
That's right. Yep. Yeah, so I think there's some historical stuff. Anything that landed in the DID working group or the verifiable credential working group is probably fair game. Like DID resolution was incubated here. It's not on
yes.
You know.
Okay, so yeah, this is very out of date. And I guess like one of the problems is like if we were going to update this, would we also have to be like submitting PRs to that CG reports?
But I think we can basically say like, we've got the source code repositories, and so we can go back in time. And we can publish the document at the point in time, and we can tell the CG report folks like, hey, we forgot to publish it at this point in time. We would like to do it now, as long as the chairs are like, yes, we want to do that. I think that's all they'd need to hear.
Okay, great. Well, I'll try and create a list. Maybe you can help me, but of the ones that are missing. Yeah, I agree. I think it'd be good to do that. And then the other question is like, I mean, there's only 2 minutes, but what other reports do we think that we're currently working on as a group that might be finalized in the future, like next year, and are there new reports we want to start? Like I said, the DID link resources is one, but is there, I'm not aware of, or I'm aware of, not missing, Manu?
Ideally, VC barcodes, VC wireless, VC API. Ideally, the post-quantum signature, crypto suites, render method, and confidence method are the ones that immediately come to mind.
Great. Yeah. So this is kind of like there are, cause I have a list somewhere, like a spreadsheet with all the working groups on and what of those work items are working on a report that hopefully one day will become final. I think that's right.
Yep. Traceability is we talked about that today, but
yes, hopefully traceability is going to be published soon before Christmas, I hope. Great. Well, that was useful to me at least just to, find a new place where things should live.
Thanks, Will. All right, last call for any other comments or questions or suggestions. So a quick final note. So Kimberly will graduate from the W3C CCG culture. So we're looking for nominations for another culture. Right now we have Gillian Walsh from MIT DCC. As the nomination, so that if you have further people that you want to nominate or recommend, just let us know. We will try to send out this email probably in the next few weeks. I haven't gotten to it yet, but we're looking for a new culture starting beginning of next year. All right, thanks a lot. Thank you. This concludes this week's CCG meeting. Thanks everybody, and also big thanks to people who help us update that work item updates. Thanks a lot. Bye.